This is Julia Cahill for EG, and in this podcast you can hear four of the key figures in the UK commercial property auction market. Firstly, from the two largest players, George Walker, partner and auctioneer at Allsop, and then Richard Autorak, chairman and auctioneer at Acuitas. We also have Simon Bailey, who recently joined online auctioneer BidX1 as a director, moving across with a team from Lambert Smith Hampton, and Jeremy Green, director at Lambert Smith Hampton, who is heavily involved in driving forward with an online-only auctions business. So the reason for getting together was the launch of EG's fifth Property Auction Buyer's Guide, which you can now find as a digital edition on the Investor Guides tab on EGI. And there was so much to discuss given the challenges facing the investment market as a whole right now. So we started with the thorny topic of high street retail, the bread and butter of the commercial auction room, with George and Richard giving their take on buyer and vendor sentiment and whether valuations are catching up with reality. We moved on to other assets with Simon and Jeremy, including sought after industrial lots and also public sector assets. With transaction levels certainly down year on year, we discussed where the growth could come from next year, including end of year valuations and loan renewals. We're not seeing vendors under pressure to sell yet, but could that change next year? Finally, there were some strong views from around the table worth staying with us for about the role of technology and online auctions in the future of the auctions market. Are online auctions encroaching on in-room sales, or should they be seen rather as a means to grow the reach of auctions alongside in-room sales, which still have such a loyal following? And where can the highest prices be achieved? Just starting off with retail, given that that's so prominent in the news at the moment, I'd be interested to know, George and Richard, where you see sentiment among buyers and vendors at the moment towards high street retail. George, first, do you want to come in there and tell us a bit about what you're seeing?
Yeah, sure.
In terms of selling those assets through the auction room at the moment.
Yeah, I think the key is sentiment, and we are dealing with a private buyer, and they are very, very close to how they feel as shops performing. And the reality is that Richard and I largely, 70-80% of what we sell, what we offer, is high street retail. So we've got quite a good handle on where the buyers see the centre of risks. And I actually had the summer off. I left the market in the end of June and came back in early October on sabbatical. And I think one of the things that I picked up in that 3 month gap was that end of June, the last person I saw was one of our regular clients going to his valuers to say, come on, guys, you're not being realistic. The valuations have come down and you're not listening to the market. And I think when I came back in early October, the market really had accepted this significant change in demand and in yields that you could attain for high street assets. The challenge really underlying any investment asset class is, where's the occupational demand for that rental income? How's it going to be filled when the lease has got 3, 4, 5 years to run? And that is a question we're all asking ourselves on every high street. Yes, there are the Canterburys, there's the Oxfords, there's the Cambridge, these fantastic market towns. But if you look at Tunbridge Wells, you know, it's a nice town in the southeast, but the occupancy rate is alarmingly high, and we need to accept that. And therefore, when these yields creep out, we can find these buyers, no question. And I think every auction will show you where we have found buyers for difficult assets. But the sellers are accepting a different level of yield, and perhaps some of these buyers who are getting double-digit yields in high street, they're spotting opportunities, and perhaps they'll make most of it. But the world has changed massively, certainly in the last 6 months.
So you think that there may still be some way to go, though, in that, within that sort of acceptance of where values are?
I think so. The demand, we can still point to sales at 4 and 5% for a 10-year bank in a nice southeast town with a couple of flats above it. So it shows you two things: that there is the people, the buyers will push for these what they perceive to be very quality, very safe, slightly diverse within the asset purchases. But then when you've got to be doing a shopping centre, a tertiary shopping centre, and it's 20-21%, You know, that's way beyond, that's down to land value. But perhaps they're where they should be. And everyone knows, the BBC did an article 10 days ago about 200 shopping centres in distress. It's very, very real. And if the owners want to transact those assets, the yield is going to have to be very generous. And we did £8.5 million of tertiary shopping centres in October auction at 17, at 21 and 21%. And now that's pretty generous for the buyer. The great thing is we've got the buyers. We really have got those buyers. But that's a transformation from the values of 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Richard, would you like to come in there and tell us how that overlaps with what you're seeing in the auction room? Perhaps about the supply of assets initially from vendors. Are they willing to accept this shift in values at the moment?
Providing we talk to our buyers and sellers, the direction of flow is easier to spot, and we're a very privileged position as auctioneers to be able to do that. I think that a couple of things I wanted to add to what George said, which I think are quite interesting. One is that the percentage of retail properties sold at our auctions now reaches 85%. Now, you wouldn't expect that, bearing in mind the torrent of negative news about the retail market over many, many years now. We're talking about negative news about the retail market for the last 3 or 4 years. It's remarkable we actually have a market at all after all that negative comment. But 85%, that's above the long-term 30-year average. The 30-year average is about 65%, two-thirds. 85%. I think that's the first thing to note, that despite what we read in the press and what everyone hears, it's not just us, it's everybody, there is this high percentage of retail going through.
So that suggests there's demand?
Yes, absolutely.
But also, yeah.
Absolute demand. But I think the other interesting thing that's happened, and George absolutely put his finger on it, between May and June and September, October, the market, shall I say, the buyers and sellers quickly reacted to the state of what had happened, what was happening in the retail market, starting off this year with the CVAs. And what surprised me is how quickly buyers and sellers have adjusted to this new reality. And when you look at the, have they adjusted to it? What's the evidence of them adjusting to it? Well, frankly, when it comes to Allsops and us, our sell rates for retail are north of 85%, between 85 and 90%. Yeah, and I think that's another interesting thing, because if you go back in history and you look back 30 years, sell rates are a proxy for volatility. What's very interesting is we're seeing consistently very high sell rates, except for moments of dire stress. Mm. And the dire stress this year in the retail market was that week when we had, was it 10 CVAs announced? That's a difficult one, that.
To follow that with an auction is very difficult.
Exactly right. Mm. But that adjustment has taken place. I would say that from the buyer's perspective, yes, they are risk averse. This is not a one-way ticket. Thank goodness, because once we have one-way tickets, then we know what happens next. The ticket riot expires. They're risk averse. They are being very careful and selective. And what the sellers are doing are recognising where there's the greatest strength in the buying market. So if you have this understanding by sellers of where the buying market is, then you do get the trades can take place, and we are demonstrating some, actually, quite frankly, this is not to brag, it is remarkably high sell rates, despite all the uncertainty of the political, economic and financial uncertainty. We're getting these high sell rates. I think that's quite remarkable.
Are there some kinds of vendors, though, that are still holding back because just having those, the valuations are just too uncomfortable with what they've originally had on the books? And
totally right. That is the biggest issue in, I mean, we've seen this before in the previous cycles, and I shouldn't, I come back to cycles because you did mention the cycles in the brief, and I question whether we are in a cycle actually, or we could
or
be
one
in,
that
actually,
people can understand. Yeah,
we could be in multi-cycles, but
a lot of forces happening. I think that's the point.
Sorry,
there are quite a lot of forces going on at the moment, aren't there, Richard?
There are
just an inevitable cycle. There's lots,
and I think that when you have rental values coming down 70% in certain towns, I think that creates huge uncertainty. I think that many of our clients, which are institutional property companies, the people that do employ valuers, you know, we are checked and checked again against other people who are advising on those assets. I think that valuers will find it quite difficult to be able to read the market. But if you look back to 2008 and 2009 and how the valuers took on board the financial crisis then, they took it on board and they reacted very firmly and decisively at that stage. It may be that they need to act decisively at this phase in the market.
Mm. George, yeah, do you want to come in there? Because
it's very easy to say there's a 7-year cycle or 18-year cycle, mm-hmm. whatever particularly you choose. The noughties crash was a great financial crisis, the GFC. Lots written about it. You know, the banks have refinanced since then. LTVs are 60-65%. I was sitting next to the head of lending at a major retail bank the other day. There isn't one. They just had a board meeting in Birmingham. There wasn't one loan on their books that was in default. The only thing he said to me, the only thing he did say was that when they'd done a 60% LTV loan, actually it may be doing 75 or 80% when they chose to revalue it. So he didn't see any finance-driven pressure to sell, and that is the key. In the noughties, it was a massive financial crisis. You know, RBS didn't know what they were lending on, largely. It took them 3 years to establish the postcode for every loan below £2.5 million. I mean, quite seriously, it was a roulette wheel of lending. We haven't got that. We've got the B word hanging over us, massive uncertainty in Europe. We've got Trump waging war on China. You know, we've got, alongside that, a change in the high street, which is, you know, generational change, which we will work out. There's three different forces. But you haven't got this absolute change, absolute crisis of finance, and that's really important. Mm. Really, we mustn't get over dramatic about this. We're responding to these three different factors, at least three different factors, and yeah. I think there's probably more.
Yeah, but we're in a more comfortable place because lending became that bit more cautious.
Absolutely. We've got the highest employment in this country we've ever had. We've got growth 0.5% ahead of forecast. But when you forecast 72%, you know, that's quite a lot of margin. So it's the dreaded uncertainty as well, doesn't really help.
If we broaden out a little to other areas of the market and bring Jeremy and Simon in, could you both give us an idea of what sort of sentiment you're seeing? Simon, do you want to come in first?
Excuse me. Yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of what Richard and George have just been discussing on the retail sector, there is a lot of overlap there going into others. But I think what, in the press, retail in particular has been very much maligned. And I think Richard has not necessarily dispelled that as being a myth, but has certainly said that perhaps, you know, the reality, given the stats that have been quoted here, are not quite what you might be led to believe. And I think with that comes opportunity. And I think this is where you're seeing this underlying level of demand, not just in the retail sector, albeit there is a massive price differential between what is now defined as being prime and what might be now secondary, tertiary. And I think those parameters have actually closed in a lot over recent years in terms of what may have been defined as being prime is now very much far from being within that category. But I think you see a lot of overlap going into other sectors, you know, whether it be office, industrial, a lot of the alternative use sectors as well, where actually a lot of people perhaps are focusing more effort now. And there's a lot more focus going forward. But as I say, with adversity, for want of a better word, comes opportunity. And that's certainly what traditionally, I've not operated in a market maybe akin to George and Richard, which has been very high street focused, high street retail focused. you know, our focus over the years has been very much more on the mixed use. So we'd say a lot of more opportunistic buyers as opposed to income-driven purchases and strong yields. So I think, you know, looking at it from that angle, you know, I think we're in a very good marketplace at the moment. There is price corrections. There has to be. Rents on the high street, of course, as has just been discussed at length, are only going in one direction. But I think, you know, a lot of that price correction has already been done. And I think where we're fortunate as auctioneers is we see it at the forefront. And everybody, you know, and we are still very much a barometer for what everyone else sees in that market. And I think it's important that as a market generally, whether it be sector specific on retail, industrial, office, whatever that looks like, I think, you know, the market is there. It's there. It's visible to see. That's what public auctions are always all about. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, who would do well to actually focus on what the reality is of that market, rather than perhaps the theory behind it.
And are you seeing, we've been hearing a lot about demand for alternative assets away from retail that are growing. Are you sort of tapping into that or hoping to tap into that further?
You know, I mean, one beauty of what we've always done is been very one sector specific, and so I think we've always, you know, had that blend, and I know guys around the table here will say the same as well. There's always been that blend, but there's got to be that focus away now from what are perhaps dwindling sectors or perceived to be dwindling sectors, and where there is caution from buyers. As I say, you know, for the reasons I've mentioned, I think there will still be opportunity within those sectors, but there has to be a move away, and the market is following slowly and moving towards the alternative uses, whether that be motor trade, whether that be medical, educational, you know, for where there is some longevity of uses, and which is not going to go internet-based ultimately. You know, education is still going to be there. People are still going to need haircuts. There's going to be funeral directors. You know, so there are still a lot of uses. You know, it's a rather mundane way of, you know, or morose way of looking at things. But the reality is, you know, that is the way the market is going. And I think that is the way the investment market is following.
Jeremy, what would your take be?
I think looking at it from my perspective, the commercial real estate market, I think, generally is still in a very good place. Yeah, there is, in the wider market, there is still plenty of activity. And we saw last quarter, we saw £17 billion worth of transactions across the market. This is wider than the auction market. This is the general investment market. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to see probably £60 billion for the year in total, and I think what that points towards is that the UK is still seen as a secure platform for investment. I think people are still looking to us for deployment of their funds, but I think what's waiting around the corner is this dreadful Brexit word, and the caution and the uncertainty, really, that is going to produce. And the market doesn't like uncertainty. So we're seeing a relatively strong quarter. I think the auction market, as has been said, tends to lead the way. So we're seeing a reduction in activity within the auction market, but I think that's largely led by the reduction in the retail market, which, as has been discussed already, is seeing some difficulties. Within other markets, industrial in particular is really strong at the moment. And anything that is let on a long lease to a strong covenant, that is also very highly sought after, and values are maintaining. And we've got continuing overseas interest as well. Partly, again, that's driven partly by the security of our market, partly by continuing currency benefits. But I think moving on, there will be caution in the market. I think that transactional turnover will reduce, but I think as long as people are sensible about the numbers that they're looking to achieve, there will be a marketplace out there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, as has been discussed around the table already, I think it's pricing is crucial, and it's the vendors that are accepting of the market pricing, because whatever we say and do, we can't buck what the market tells us, and the market at the moment is saying, particularly in retail, that there is is risk out there, and that risk is being priced in.
And on your looking at the kind of stock that you're selling, I think I'm right in saying that public sector vendors feature quite heavily for you. So how would you say that they're, how are they sort of reacting to the market? Are they holding back and waiting for a bit more certainty to achieve best price, or carrying on with their sales programmes?
We're seeing no evidence of anyone holding back at the moment. Our market, as you rightly say, we do a lot of work for local authorities, for public sectors, the DIO. We are also doing a lot of work for IPs, for insolvency practitioners, who, and that is a continuing market, and it's a market where they are just looking to sell. They obviously want to achieve the best price, but it's the best price in the market at that time, and this is the key to auction, and the key to online auctions, as you'll know. We've now focused fully on online auctions, and where we see that going is that is widening our pool of buyers. So whereas the activity in the market may be reducing, values may be changing, the pool for buyers, I think, is expanding, and that's the element that we are finding most exciting just at the moment.
Great. Well, we'll definitely come back to that that area. We should look forwards, I think, and talk about where growth might come from over the next year. We know that volumes of stock traded have been a little bit down over the past 12 months, if you compare year on year. But so where might the growth come from going forward? Richard, what are you anticipating for next year?
Well, Julia, as you know, I'm a born optimist, and tomorrow's always better than today. I think that mathematically, it's a bit like rental values. There's a limit to how low they can go. And from there, you then get growth, and that applies in any market. I think the commercial auction market for that we represent, is a private investor market. And that market has been showing much more caution, much lower volumes coming to the market since the peak of the 2016 period. So we've seen overall, since actually the Brexit vote, lower volumes, and I know this is well reported, lower volumes have been coming forward. So on the basis of that, can it go much lower? The answer is, well, no, it can't, because there are still a very large private buyer market with equity, with debt, and they want to do trades, they want to buy. So if you've got the buyers, keen buyers, okay, you can segment the buyers between prime and secondary, but there are buyers there. It's inevitable that sellers will reach into that market. I think going forward, the issues will be valuation. I think that many of our mainstream selling clients have cognizance of valuations. So how the valuation industry reacts to the current market is going to be key for us. Mm-hmm. If values are above market prices, then the chances are that most sellers will say, I'm not going to make that decision. So I think it's about how valuers approach this. We're coming up to a very interesting time in our market, the end of year valuations, and as we've seen, we've been anticipating some interesting things happening at the end of the year in terms of valuations. I think that the institutions will still want to trade out of the smaller assets. Mm. And again, I think that that's an interesting issue for the auction market, is that what lot size is included within the auction market? And I see that the market that should be covering with private investors should be the £3-5 million market. So you could see the growth there
in the larger lot sizes,
because the buyers at auction are those buyers who will, and are probably the only buyers who are buying the assets in that 2-5 million range. Mm. And we do have experience of private treaty, and we know that who the buyers are, their suppliers are only close to us. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that applies to everybody in the room here. They're aware of those buyers.
Any other sort of key drivers? So valuations, as you've mentioned.
I think if you've other key drivers, and I know you speak you keep very close to our own Stuart Buchanan of Acuitas Finance, and you're aware that a lot of the finance that was written post the financial crisis was maximum 5-year loans. Those 5 years are steadily coming in now. They will need refinance, and again, it comes back to valuations. How does that valuation compare with the loan to value that was originally put on that asset? Mm. Are the loan to values now too high because values have come down? So that's a very interesting market to proposition. Mm. How will sellers react to that?
Yeah, absolutely. George, perhaps I could bring you in there on the topic of valuation. So end of year valuations, how quickly could we see that leading to stock coming into your catalogue next year? What's the time lag?
I think, you know, I come back to the point that the commercial assets are income producing assets, and where there's drama, we can sell these assets quickly, and we're very, very liquid medium. That's what we do. It will feed more in, and interestingly, before the year end, some funds who've made tremendous gains in other asset areas will be, and in this auction we've got about 15 or 20 from one fund, they're just putting a lot of stock through because they've had tremendous gains elsewhere in the fund, and they can see these end of year valuations coming down, which is great, so they've got sensible values. I think the finance point is interesting. As I said earlier, you know, we did have the GFC, and that was creating new rules. We've had a tremendous growth in the bridging finance market. You know, there's one point, I think I got an email every other day from someone saying I'm the best thing since sliced bread when it comes to bridge finance, anything, and, you know, my dad's got this and I can do that. From people who didn't know a whole lot about it, I went to an event and I sat next to a really entrepreneurial, fantastic, engaging chap, and he did a lot of bridging finance, and he'd just done his first two commercial deals, and I said, so which values do you use? Our valuers wouldn't do that, so we just got on with it.
Really? Okay.
That was one example. Yeah. I'm not saying all the bridging finance markets like that. It's an unregulated sector, and they've lent a lot of money. And if you look at Lendi today, I just picked this up on sitting having a coffee in the Telegraph this morning. You know, there's some of the debts, the peer-to-peer debt, is going wrong. And if you read, if you were to take what they said in the Telegraph seriously, that would be a massive indicator the property market's got some significant issues. Mm. I think that's sensationalising something. But the bridging finance sector has been unregulated and a little bit cavalier, so that may cause deliver stock to a market. But we don't sense it yet. And, I say yet because I'm a miserable auctioneer. You know, Rich is the optimist, I'm perhaps the pessimist. But it comes back to the asset. Until when the sellers are motivated, we can have a tremendous rise in stock. You know, all stocks do £600 million a year, have done for some time, and about 400 in the residential sector. That's consistent. With Brexit looming and my voice going, capital markets have to slow down. It happened before the last referendum vote. The first auction after it kicked off, and within 3 weeks we're off again.
Yeah. Simon, where might you expect to see growth?
I think just picking up on George's last point there, you know, there's a lot of sitting on hands, I think, from the seller's point of view at the moment, as we've demonstrated, or hopefully demonstrated around the table. You know, I don't think any of our concerns lie at the doors of sellers, of buyers at the moment. There is a huge buying pool that we have access to at the moment, and for us it's about stock deliverability. So I think there will be an element of holding back, for quarter one next year, once hopefully this Brexit fiasco is all sort of not necessarily behind us, but you know, the worst of it is over. You know, hopefully that will start to see a little bit more of that coming back. I mean, traditionally you touched on it earlier, we sold a lot of public sector stock, and I think certainly the conversations that we're having with our public sector clients at the moment is there is going to be more coming to the market through that sector next year. The receivership liquidation market is always one that's very difficult to predict, but again, speaking to clients in that sector as well, a lot of them are bolstering teams here and there in terms of recruiting and recruiting very heavily in certain areas. So that's sort of an indicator in itself as to perhaps where they see the market going next year as well. And naturally, we've always known that auctions have been very friendly to that sort of sector in terms of delivering stock quickly to market. Mm-hmm. So I think ultimately none of us have the answer, but you know, based on perception and our experience, you know, that to me is where I see things going next mm-hmm. year.
Great. Jeremy?
I think what's interesting in just looking at the transactional stats, the volume of transactions I think has gone down in the last quarter or so in terms of pounds, but actually the number of transactions still seems to be holding up, and I think it's the lot size that's going down. Now whether the lot size is going down because it's smaller lots or because actually values are going down and vendors are being more realistic about their targets, but I think for next year, we, as has been said before, we act for public sector bodies, utility companies, and there is still a desire to sell surplus stock and to get properties off their books that are weighing them down for one reason or another. It's asset management potential that they want to pass on to a buyer, and also what has been touched on, and we're seeing this from the institutions, is that they are themselves focusing on larger lot sizes. So there is a desire to sell out of the smaller, more management intensive lots. Mm-hmm. And the auction medium is a very good way to achieve that.
Mm. So hopefully some growth coming from that direction then for next year. I can't let you go, all of you, without talking about the issue of ballroom and online auctions. I know you will all have strong views about what role both of those can play, and perhaps we're wrong to separate them out even, but what role they might play in the next stage of the cycle, how much growth might we see from online auctions. Meanwhile, we're seeing sort of huge volumes of stock still going through the traditional ballroom auction. Richard, do you want to touch on that topic? What role do you think ballroom auctions will play in the next stage of the cycle? Are they here to stay?
Firstly, we don't call them ballroom auctions. That was a phrase that was a pejorative.
It's an old-fashioned phrase.
Yes, precisely, and it was put out to emphasise somehow that we weren't moving on. Technology is the second largest spend we have in Acuitas after our staff. Mm-hmm. We have been spending consistently very high sums of money on technology, and I think those that do want to drive a division between room auctions and online auctions are suggesting that somehow we're not spending on technology. We're using very advanced technology indeed. At the end of the day, it's what the client wants to do. As an industry, auction industry, over many years, I've I've said that we must encourage innovation. A lot of the things they've been doing around the regions have been innovative. It's innovative because it's what the customer wants. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, the customer will dictate what it is. I think a lot of the debate recently has been orchestrated by people who have an axe to grind. No one around this table is in that, by the way. Present company absolutely accepted. But if you look at our room auctions, we are investing heavily in technology, and we're providing facilities for people to bid into the room by internet, as other firms do, by telephone, by proxy. So we are enabling anyone, anywhere in the world, to bid into our room. What is clear about the room auctions is that for the biggest buyers, they form relationships in the room. They create relationships. They talk to people. It is a room that's full of activity. It's a room where marketplaces is being formed. They enjoy coming to the auctions. What we do recognise, of course, is that that is a relatively small number of potential buyers. Ultimately, if you look forward 10 years, certainly we want to grow our core base from a few thousand to tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. And that's when the technology invests that we are making will allow that to happen. At the end of the day, there are some firms that have got a fantastic track record already. We're winners in our market. Mm. Buyers trust us. Sellers trust us. We're professional. We're Child Surveyors for 30, 40 years. We know what we're doing. And as been said already, it's a lot of... we're no different from any other investment surveyor you find in our old firm at JLL or CBRE. So we have those core skills. Mm-hmm. All we're talking about is the final closing mechanism. Mm. And I think that a lot has been written about that. I think a lot of false things have been written about it. And I think as an auction industry, it does us no service that we seem to end up being polarised between one or the other, because quite frankly, that is absolutely not the case at all.
So it's one, you're all part of the same market.
We're all servicing a private investor market, exactly right. And that's the market we're providing services to. Mm. There's no question that the biggest buyers, those that dominate our market at the moment, the several, let's say 1,000 or 2,000 people, want to come to the auction room. Absolutely. They are repeat buyers. They're mm-hmm. knowledgeable buyers. There are others who'd actually be terrified of putting their hands up in the room. But actually, when we do look at the internet buyers, people who bid and bought online, they say, I can't be bothered to travel to London, or I'm too busy. I don't want to hang around for 3 hours in the auction room. And they said, that's why we bid by auction. I bid by internet. Mm. Well, great. That's what they can do.
Would you consider offering some specific lots sort of in an online format?
A pure online auction. Yes, I take my cue from Sotheby's or Christie's, and that they also have pure online auctions. Mm. I think, again, it's about where you want to... Acuitus and other firms can go on a journey. I think we have a superb business model at the moment, but we're moving it on, and we have been moving it on for many years now, into a technology-enabled business. Mm. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to throw away, 300 or 400 million pounds of sales a year by going online if it means that I lose that 300 or 400 million pounds. So I want to make that 300 or 400 million pounds a year into £1 billion a year, by making sure that we use technology is one thing. It's actually empowering our buyers to use the technology. And when companies say, here's our piece of technology, now you're going to use it, it's never worked that way. Mm. It's never worked that way. The best things we've ever done in the last 30 years, either at Jones Lang or I can't speak for Jones Lang, so I can't do that. But at Acuitus are those where the client, the buyer, or the seller says to you, can you do this? We think, wow, yes, of course we can do it. Never thought about that. And those are the most fulfilling things, is when our sellers and buyers say, I'd like this, can you do it? Great. Yes, of course we can.
Yeah. Well, George, that might tap in very nicely to what you've been doing lately, because obviously in-room auctions, I shall not call them ballroom, but in-room auctions are still huge, huge business for you, but you've been using some bespoke online sales for a specific client, which have gone very well.
And I think Allsop's the only firm of auctioneers to have had an online only and a ballroom auction in the same 4-week period. You know, we started online only in Ireland back in 3 years ago, and we've let it evolve. Allsop's is about evolution, not revolution, and I think there is a Richard and I coined a phrase some time ago, multi-channel auction. And if you look at the stats, I wrote an article for the EG with you, which is quite fun actually looking at the stats. So our last auction, 143 transactions in the multi-channel auction, 6 of which were sold to internet bidders. We had 230 people who wished to bid remotely by phone or by proxy or by online, and so we create this heady mix. And at the same time, we're pushing away we're chatting constantly to the overseas chaps who are the arrive for the ballroom auction week, as they see it, and they will come and see the auctioneers. They'll look us in the eye. Why should I buy this? Why should I buy that? And they'll chat and they'll see someone else bidding and they'll buy it. So it's a heady mix, and that's what delivers it. And we've taken the route of endorsing the single vendor auction. I think it works incredibly well. And if you look back at the Lloyds Bank portfolios we sold in the mid 90s, we sold something about six Lloyds Bank only auctions. We had Clyde's Bank portfolios in about 10 years later. We had an auction dedicated to a Speedy Hire as a tenant portfolio. We had those auctions, a single book auction, one vendor. It worked incredibly well. So I can see that being replicated. So if someone came to us with a portfolio of little well-let shops or the Vision Express portfolio we had recently, a dozen units, very similar, I could see there's tremendous scope to do that, because you can put the time and the place, and they put the time when you like. But interesting, the there's a lot of chat about it. We are actually just agents. We're doing the best job we can for our clients. And I'd say that some of the Allsop guys in our team are great agents. They sense when to take a bid prior to auction. They sense when something's really special, it should go to the ballroom auction, whatever you like to say. They're very good agents. That is our job. That's central to our DNA. And if we see something best sold on an online basis, we'll talk to the client and we'll have a chat about it. Mm-hmm. But I think there are more clients worried about, you know, the imposition of rates relief on high street retailers, more clients worried about buy-to-let stamp duty on buy-to-let assets than there are demanding we go online. Mm. If they've got an asset to sell, they'll ask us. They trust us. They don't ask us where we advertise it. They don't ask us how we advertise it. We need to a big digital footprint. We need a big paper footprint. We need to be doing the press and PR that we all know and love to get these buyers engaged with us and looking at these assets we're instructed to sell. And that's the absolute key. Now, there is no answer. But if you look on the train in the morning and you look at what people are reading, they're not reading a paper. They're on their tablet. Mm-hmm. And we have all responded to that. And indeed, we could keep doing so. Mm.
Simon, you might bring a different perspective to you've worked a lot in online auctions, getting that off the ground, and your focus going forward, I think, is going to be heavily online, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I suppose I'm an interesting sort of case study in a way, being a sort of auctioneer of 15, 20 years who's now sort of taking the plunge to go into the digital online online platform. I mean, we, as you mentioned there, Julia, I mean, we've been doing online auctions for a couple of years, 2.5 years now, alongside the ballroom auctions, and have seen how much that has organically grown throughout that period. A lot of the feedback we were getting through that period was from clients very much focused on the flexibility side of the system, the ability to bespoke something akin to what George was just saying there about those portfolio sales that maybe 5 years ago the online could have been a viable alternative of route to market. But I think also Richard hit on the point earlier about I think there's a lot of people who are trying to make this big distinction between I nearly said it, Richard. Ballroom. I'm not going to say it. The in-room. Well, they'll edit that out. Don't worry. The in-room and the online. But we are all part of the same market. It's the same people who are behind it. It's the same professional advisors behind it. Again, this isn't a bunch of, sort of shiny suit, brown shoe guys sitting, sitting in a room just doing churn. So for us, an opportunity came to you know, and having dipped the toe in the water over the last 2.5 years with the online sales, as I say, we just felt that actually there is a charge here that, you know, we might be a little way away from yet in terms of, you know, I'm not suggesting for a second that Ballroom are suddenly going to be extinct in the next 5 years, but I certainly see a massive growth in the online market going forward. And that was just something that we felt there was a very good opportunity to be part of. You know, we're getting a lot of feedback from clients who need to be more prop tech savvy in the way they deliver things. And, you know, but to say the whole process, whether it be in-room auctions or online auctions, the same process there. It's just the end, you know, delivery to market process at the end mm-hmm. that is different. And now a lot of people will have a lot of different views, and even I'm sure around this table is, that have been expressed about the people nature of the business and the fact that you can come to an auction room, meet people, and create sort of relationships. It builds relationships. But I think the market is not moving away from that, but I think the other side of the market is growing massively, and that's the part that we've engaged in terms of, you know, George alluded then on a train in the morning, everyone's on their tablets. And I was over in Dublin last week for our Dublin offices sale there, and it was amazing to see the accessibility to the data that you get around this that you just mm-hmm. simply cannot replicate in other mediums, you know, akin to where were we. And everyone is the other feedback we found, again, from running sort of internet bidders alongside the Ballroom, was akin to phone bidders and proxy bidders. There may be a reason for doing it. It may just because they can't be bothered to come down from Doncaster to bid in an auction room in London. But I think a lot of buyers felt that they were perhaps at somehow of a disadvantage when they were bidding silently against people who were physically in the room. So at least on the online auction platform, everyone is bidding on a level playing field. Now, the detriment to that might be, as Richard mentioned earlier, the lack of visibility and the lack of opportunity to come and see the buzz and see who is bidding, because you only see on your screen it's bidder 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whoever it might be. But I think equally, everyone can be safe in the knowledge that it is fully transparent. Everyone is bidding on a level playing field. And from that's from the buyer's perspective. From the seller's perspective, it's one of, you know, transparency again is key. You know, a lot of the private equity houses who we deal with now, for that it is key, so that you know, the registration process, the money lodging process, in terms of everyone being vetted and physically putting funds down before they bid, is massive for them in terms of ticking a box in terms of the transparency protocols mm. that they have to go through as sellers. That can be replicated in a Ballroom environment, of course it can, but, you know, being able to automate all of that and gear it all around a digital online platform just streamlines the whole process. And that for us was you know, where we saw the future going, and just felt that, you know, we wanted to be part of something that perhaps was going to lead the charge on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Jeremy, you'll have a view. You're not doing Ballroom or in-room auctions anymore, are you?
No, we're not.
LSH, so.
No, that's right. And
give us some background on that.
It's a brave new world out there. I think that the future is online, and that's not to say that in-room auctions are failing or are dead, but I think that online sales are the future. I think that, as has been described, more and more people are conducting their world online, on their phone, on their tablet, mm-hmm. and particularly the younger generation coming forward. And there's a new world of buyers out there. Again, it's been mentioned that I think in the traditional format, many people find that very intimidating, very uncomfortable, and they will prefer to deal with it within their own space and within their own time. And I think, yeah, that's the facility that we're providing for people. You know, it is widening that buyer pool. It is bringing new entrants into the market, and we have discovered we did some research and some analysis, and, you know, acting for a particular client where we have sold for them within the in-room environment, and then sold very similar lots for them as online sales. We would generally, the premium above reserve was higher, and we've been able to show that broadly speaking there was an 18% premium for online sales versus in-room sales. Now, that is an indication that that particular sale was better suited to, or that particular type of stock.
Would that be quite hard to take suited. That stat in isolation?
Mm-hmm.
Because give me two assets the same, let alone a basket of assets. It's quite bold. Mm-hmm. I take the point, but it's quite a bold.
Yeah, yes. And
suggesting your initial reserves were 18% wrong in a basket of assets, but I'd love to see the stats.
Yes. And the point I'm making there is that that particular style of asset was better suited to online sales.
But hard to compare then to... Anyway, comparing apples and pears is a tough gig.
Yeah, but in terms of our activity, we, as you say, we've decided to concentrate fully on online sales. We are getting very little resistance to that. So the vendors that we are acting for are accepting online as a method of sale, and are providing us with the opportunity to show them what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
I think, as also has been discussed, there's a lot more focus these days on what's generally referred to as customer due diligence and the process behind vetting a buyer, which is for anti-money laundering purposes. In terms of the requirement to do it, but actually is beneficial to the vendor, because we've got much greater knowledge as to the identity and the wherewithal of the buyer, which creates increased certainty in terms of who we're talking to and their ability to close on a deal.
Mm-hmm. On that asset that you felt was better suited to online, then, and I take George's point that that's hard to do a really sort of accurate like for like comparison. But what was it about that asset that you think did make it better suited to online?
Yes, I mean, it wasn't one particular asset, so it's a group of assets. So we haven't just taken one asset, like all statistics, you need to temper it. So it was a group of assets, but it was a group of assets where, it's redundant land that had an opportunity for development, particularly for housing, for interesting development to take place, and it's an asset where the principal buyer was were private individuals who perhaps hadn't been engaged in the in-room auction market
before. So they wouldn't feel comfortable.
So they're new entrants to the market.
Yeah.
The way that we market the product, we achieved a wider reach, and we were able to secure that wider buyer pool.
Yeah, okay. So probably quite a different type of buyer to who we might see in the room at Acuitas or Allsop, then. It's a more specific, local buyer.
Yeah, it's a very hard asset to put a price on, Jeremy, isn't it? I mean, opportunity land is very hard to price. So, yeah.
Richard, did you want to raise something? I saw a scribbling to wrap us up with.
Well, I think it's dangerous using statistics. I think I've used them once, which was 87% of the property or whatever it is in our auctions were retailer. That is verified by MSCI, who we have a research partnership with. I think that my concern was Jeremy coming up with a statistic that on the face of it suggested that somehow online auctions achieved in this particular case 18% more. And I think George did come back on that. I think it's dangerous as an industry when we start banding around statistics. What I would say is that as time goes on, there'll be better evidence about what will work better online. But when it comes to the assets that George and I deal with, the investment, the larger investment assets, I think that that type of asset that Jeremy was describing has a different buyer base. And as George just indicated, when you're looking at development land, well, frankly, we know that valuers themselves can be plus or minus 50%. So it's a very imprecise client. But I wouldn't want our audience to go away and say, and think that, that online auctions can achieve 18% more than or all assets that are sold. I know Jeremy didn't mean that, but I just felt that I ought to, George ought to say, look, you know, hey, treat that with some caution, please.
Yeah, it's very asset specific, I guess. I
mean, just coming on, so I totally agree with what's being said there. But from, you know, coming from the perspective of somebody who's now sat very firmly on both sides of the fence, so to speak, ultimately this is just a simple matter of choice. I say no one's trying to reinvent the wheel here. It's about the same process, just being delivered in a slightly different way, and that ultimately comes down to choice to the vendors. Ultimately, I think from a buyer's point of view, is a buyer not going to buy something because it's online rather than in a ballroom? No, quite frankly, if it's an asset that they're after, if it's an asset that's priced correctly, they'll bid on it, whether it's by phone, internet, or running into a room and sticking, you know, holding up a catalogue in the air. So it's the vendors, it's the sellers that really just opens an avenue of choice, as I say, and that is, do they want to sell in room? Do they, you know, do they want to go online? Where the online does differ, and where we see a real driver for us, and Richard alluded to it actually earlier in the discussion, was about lot size, perhaps, and maybe going forward, how we as an independent auction house now can maybe even start to encroach maybe within some parts of the private treaty market that might previously have been unattainable through auction due to lot size, due to time constraints. You know, auctions typically three and a half week marketing period. Some assets just are not suited to the due diligence process, you know, being carried out within that short time frame. And we sold a large site earlier in the year for that very reason, which is very much akin to what Jeremy mentioned earlier about, you know, bespoking something and horses for course. It might not have been something that might have suited the ballroom environment and was felt better to be online. So it's that flexibility. For us, it's the flexibility. For the client, you know, if it's a scheduled online sale or it's a scheduled ballroom sale, you know, that for us is to sell that concept to them. Whether they decide to take that choice or go and sell it in an auction, it is all about choice. We're not competing industries here. We're all part of the same industry. We're ultimately just delivering things through a slightly different medium, which exist, and we're all sort of buying into to a lesser degree or a higher degree than the other. As I say, going forward for us as a business model, going forward, we see it very much not just focusing on the on the typical stock that we might have sold for, but it gives us a real ability to widen our client base and adapt to that in terms of the type of assets that we bring to market, and using that digital online platform going forward. And that for us is where we see a lot of growth.
So encroaching on the private treaty rather than taking away from other areas of auctions.
Well, there's always, you know, and I'm sure George and Richard will come in on this. I mean, there was a £7-8 million lot delivered through ballroom auction. I said it again. There we go, through the in-room auction earlier this year. You know, which was probably the largest ever to go through the doors of an in-room auction. Should auctions be precluded from selling bigger lot sizes? No, but there's always just been this. This thought process probably in the back of sellers' minds as to, is it actually the right medium and the right platform to do that? Are we going to sell it in a 3-week marketing period? Does that offer buyers enough time? What if, you know, a lot of doubt that gets put in people's minds. And I think just offering a simple alternative, which is really all we're doing, but something that allows a bit of flexibility. And if you need a 2-month marketing period, you can have a 2-month marketing period. And I think that's the beauty of using technology to actually provide the right advice to the client. And it may be that online isn't the right way. It may be that in-room isn't the right way. But at the end of the day, it's about choice, and it's about providing that right advice.
Mm. Well, I think we've proven we need a sequel to this discussion. There's so much more to say. But we better leave it there, I think. And thank you all very, very much
Thank you,
for contributing. Thank you.